Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Welcome to Hollywood and Levine. I am Ken Levine, your podcast host. And my guest this week and next is Mike Reiss. Now, Mike Reiss, that's a name that you have seen for many, many years. You probably don't know, but you should. He has been with The Simpsons for 30 years. Yes, 30 years. During that time, among other things, he hired Conan O'Brien. He also co-created The Critic. He was on The Gary Shandling Show. And he was fired off of any number of shows, including The Tonight Show. And for the last 12 years, he commutes between Los Angeles and New York to work a day a week on The Simpsons. He also vacations in Honduras. Yes, this is a very interesting guy. He also has a podcast about his travel adventures called, are you ready? What Am I Doing Here? Well, here is where he is this week and next. Mike Reiss, my guest on Hollywood and Levine. So, Mike, you've been with The Simpsons for like 30 years?
You know what? I just... literally 2 minutes ago, just closed the deal for my 31st year. I just got the email that I'll be going back this year. And every year it's kind of touch and go. I know some people, especially at Fox, don't like, there are those of us who just come in one day a week now and they go, why are they there? So every year I sweat it, but I just made the deal. So yeah, I've been there.
When I think about it, to just let the sentence go by, well, you've been with The Simpsons for 30 years, is like letting the sentence go by, well, you had a summer home on Mars. And, I mean, that's amazing to be on the same show for 30 years. And we'll get back to The Simpsons, but I want to start at the beginning because I'm always fascinated how every writer breaks in differently. And when you started, you had a partner, Al Jean, right? And how did you two meet?
We were roommates in college. We are some of the early Harvard guys who wound up invading Hollywood. But we were roommates in college, and Al was going to be a doctor. Al Jean was going to be a doctor. He's a brilliant genius, and he got into Harvard at age 16. And he was going to finish in 3 years and go to med school. And I went to Harvard. I really hated the place. I just went there because they had a humor magazine, Harvard Lampoon. And back in those days, it wasn't like that led you to another job. I just said, this sounds like fun. I'll join the humor magazine and then I'll become a lawyer. And so I joined the humor magazine and it was really fun and very exciting. And Al, as my roommate, saw that I was enjoying it. And so he joined too. And this was just something, you know, he never had any interest in comedy or anything like that. But he just put that magnificent brain of his to work studying comedy. And he did great. And he got on the Lampoon, very hard to get on the Lampoon. It's a competition and they only take about 7 out of every 100 people who try out, but he was a slam dunk. And so we were on the magazine together, and one night, because we were roommates, we're in our bunk beds, and we just started talking about magic books we had read as kids, and it started sounding funny, and we said we should write an article about this. And that was the first collaboration we ever had. We wrote an article called Spooky Magic. And just to jump ahead, that article got the attention of National Lampoon magazine. National Lampoon magazine called us, said, "We love this spooky magic." And I said, "You read the Harford Lampoon?" And they said, "We've been reading it for years. We never saw anything funny before." So while we were in college, we were freelancing for National Lampoon. And then we graduated and they hired us right out of college to work there.
So how did you get from the National Lampoon, which I assume was in New York?
It was in New York.
Writing comedy in L.A. because you wrote on a lot of shows prior to The Simpsons. We'll touch on some of those. So how did you make the East to West Coast jump?
It was an amazing thing. Everything in my career I achieved because these two guys named Max Frost and Tom Gamble turned them down. Everybody loved these guys.
You know, it's interesting you say that because I asked them to be on the podcast and they weren't available.
They're the greatest guys in the world. They were a year ahead of us in college, and everybody loves them. They're talented writers, and they're a joy to be around. And they get all these offers, and they turn down so many of them, and they always say, try Mike and Al. And Al and I have never turned down anything. That's the secret to our success. So they got a job offer to work on the movie Airplane 2. Airplane 2, which most people consider the better Airplane movie. So they got this offer, and they said, we don't want to do it. Try Mike and Al. And so Al and I were sending in jokes from New York to Airplane 2, which was shooting in Hollywood. And one night they called us on a Sunday. They said, "Can you be out here tomorrow?" And we said, yeah. And it was a real dick move on our part because we had a nice job at National Lampoon, but we just walked in Monday morning, quit our jobs, ran out on our leases, flew out to L.A., and we were on the set of Airplane 2 the next morning. And, suddenly we were in Hollywood. And we just worked and worked on this thing, and then the movie came out and it was kind of a dud and nobody wanted to hire us. So Al and I, we were suddenly alone out in Hollywood. Oh, this would be a funny story. Let me tell this one. We're out in Hollywood. We don't know a soul. We don't have any money. We got no jobs. We got no prospects. We wrote a cheer spec. And our agent looked at this. He said, "This will kill your career. I'm not going to send this to anybody." And it was funny because it's the kind of thing I'm thinking about almost 40 years later. I go, that was a pretty good script. He probably.
I'm just relieved that you weren't going to say, "Oh, and you rejected it."
No, it wasn't you. No, it never got out of the agent's office. And I don't know what he hated about it. I thought it was pretty good. But anyway, this is kind of the funny story. This is how we got into TV. We're living in LA. We don't know anyone. And this is the days of there's no internet. There weren't even VHS tapes. There was nothing. You just had.
Were there phones then?
There were phones. And there was TV, but no VCRs. You just had to watch what was on TV at the time. I mean, I could have read a book, but come on. So the only thing that got me through the week was watching this show Wednesday nights called 9 to 5. And everybody remembers, it was a pretty good movie from the 80s. And it became the worst TV show I'd ever seen in my life. The show 9 to 5. And it starred, what's her name? Rita Moreno, who's very good. And instead of Dolly Parton, they had Dolly Parton's cousin, who wasn't an actress. She was just Dolly Parton's cousin. And instead of Jane Fonda, they had a hairspray model. So this show, this got me through the week, was watching 9 to 5. And it was like my church. I would buy a big quart of beer, and it was sort of a special moment in the week to watch 9 to 5. And then, like, a couple of weeks later, we get a call from 9 to 5. They said, we want to meet with you. And we go in for the meeting, and they start to explain, well, this is a show about three women living together in Cleveland, and they have a son who sleeps on a shelf over the kitchen sink. And I go, yeah, and they work in a factory that makes knife blocks, and it's owned by an Icelandic man. And they go, how do you know this? And I go, I watch your show every week. And they go, we've never met anyone who's watched our show before. You're hired. So that was my first sitcom job. I got hired at 9 to 5. And, oh, it was people you know were working there. Dave Hackle was on the show. It was such a great education in TV that here was the worst show I ever saw, and yet it had these very good writers working on it. But it had a terrible couple of showrunners and just the shaky premise, and nothing could overcome that.
That's like when I was doing baseball, and I would come in contact with Bob Uecker. And I used to say to him, and he had a great sense of humor. He's very self-deprecating. And I would say, you know, you starred in Mr. Belvedere for like 4 years on ABC. I don't know a single person who ever watched an episode of Mr. Belvedere.
Yeah, that was it. We made a joke when I worked on the show Sledgehammer, where it said, I may have written it, where they call someone, what were you doing the night of Thursday 13th? I was watching Mr. Belvedere. That's a lie. So, but of course, Mr. Belvedere, we were on the same network, much higher rated show than Sledgehammer was. But anyway, so I'm working on the worst show I'd ever seen in my life. And then we got fired. Al and I got fired, I think, 11 weeks into a 13-week contract. So we weren't even good enough to work on the worst show ever.
Why'd you get fired? They just didn't think you were funny enough, or you were too funny, or you didn't write Dolly Parton's cousin correctly?
I know. You know, we wrote a good, they let us write one script, which, you know, the network moved it up to be the season premiere. The network liked the show. They said we were quiet in the room. We were quiet. And, you know, as stupid as it all was and as bad as the experience was, it was a good lesson for Al and me not to be quiet in the room. And after that, you know, we learned what you have to do in TV, which is just pitch, 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 and don't be afraid if it's bad. So we pitched a lot. But mostly I think we were sort of sacrificed. I think it was, you know, the show was so terrible, the ratings were terrible, and they came to them and said, fire somebody. So you do what almost every show does. We'll fire the new guys. They're clearly, these guys who have been here for 11 weeks are the reason this show has sucked for 4 years.
We'll get back to more of Mike Reese in a moment, but first a word about EveryPlate. Now, if you're like me, you spent the pandemic eating at home night after night after night after night. And we had a lot of chicken, and I like chicken, and we tried to prepare it some different ways. And we kind of had a running joke. We called it chicken with hats. What hat are we going to put on the chicken tonight? And even though we liked the various recipes, you know, after 14, 15 months, you just get tired of them. And then, thank God, we got involved with EveryPlate. Now, EveryPlate is the home meal kit that is better and cheaper. One meal is the cost of a cup of coffee. Now, circling back to chicken, they had a number of chicken recipes, a number of hats that we have not worn, including my personal favorite, sweet chili chicken. They give you all the ingredients. It takes about 30 minutes to prepare. You get 14 different recipes per week. It really is a great, great deal. And I want you to try EveryPlate for just $1.99 per meal, plus an additional 20% off your next two boxes by going to EveryPlate.com and entering the code Hollywood 199. As in $1.99. So get started with every plate for just $1.99 per meal, plus an additional 20% off another 2 weeks by going to everyplate.com and entering the promo code Hollywood199. Once again, that is everyplate.com. Hollywood199 is the code. And start eating some chicken with better hats. Again, I recommend the sweet chili chicken. Well, it seems like you failed upward because you worked on It's Gary Shandling Show.
Yes, that was another job. We got that because Max and Tom were working there and they wanted to go and recommended us. So we kind of came in as they were leaving. And that was a very interesting show. It was the next to the lowest rated show on TV, just above the Tracy Ullman Show. We were number 99 and 100.
Well, then we were 100 because we wrote on the Tracy Ullman Show. So yeah. You beat us.
That was it. It was very for the next to the lowest rated show on TV, it has this amazing DNA leading right to The Simpsons. Sam Simon worked on Gary Shandling Show. Jay Kogan and Wally Walidarsky were PAs there. They used to get people's lunch.
Wow. And what was it like working with Gary Shandling?
Gary, you know, he was, you know, a very, very nice man. Very nice man. And, you know, he was a writer, first and foremost. He reminded me of, you know, he had started off as a sitcom writer, and he wrote a lot of Sanford and Sons. And, you know, he had that temperament of a writer and that sort of the shattered ego of a writer. But as a boss, he was literally impossible. And I mean literally impossible. You could not please the guy. Nothing you ever pitched him, ever worked for him. No joke ever made him happy. Nothing worked for him. And part of it was, I think, this notion he knew if he had the time and if he wasn't distracted, he could do better. And you know, if he lived longer, I think he would have been perfect for modern TV where, you know, he could have done a show where they would have given him all the time in the world and, you know, he could just make six in 2 years and write and direct them all. But the fact that he had to work with other people made it very, very hard. So that's what he was, you know, a tough guy to work for, a very tough guy to please. It was, and the hours were insanely long, and we always had fun. It was funny people there, and Alan Zweibel ran the show, and he was always a pleasure, but God, it just was endless.
Did you talk to the Queen over the last, oh wait, I'm sorry, that's an Oprah question. I'm sorry. You also did The Tonight Show for 5 minutes, right? And not necessarily the news. So not just comedy.
Yes. They were
or really not fun. Just sitcom comedy.
Not just sitcom. Well, no, I like what you said the first time. And especially we were.
Oprah would not have made that mistake.
Yeah.
Or they would edit it out.
Yeah. The Carson job. It was funny. It was, again, we got recommended for that job from the boss at National Lampoon, who we had just run out on. And just, you know, it's a real, I don't think I would forgive somebody who did this, but he did, or maybe it was to punish us. We got this job at The Tonight Show. And that was a fascinating thing. You know, it was really at the darkest days of that show, like season 26, I would say. And Johnny was just this miserable man. He never wanted to see the writers. I worked there a year and a half and maybe spent 90 minutes in his presence. He erected walls on the sides of the stage so he wouldn't have to see the writers backstage.
Wow.
And he was going through a divorce. What was sort of interesting was Al and I were pre-hired. You know, the head writer hired us off of sample material we submitted. But he said, you have to have an interview with Carson. He insists on interviewing you, not knowing this would be the first and last time we ever saw him. But we we go into his office, and his office was set up like the Tonight Show. And Al and I sit on the couch, and Johnny sits behind his desk, and he interviewed us for 11 minutes, and he said something, and we laughed. And then if he could have cut to a commercial, he would have done that. It was clear this was the man's success, was that's what he could do. He could talk to anybody for 11 minutes and no more. And
what did he ask you? Like, when did your movie come out? Or
yeah, that's right. So, I don't know. He just asked us about meeting in college, and he goes, are you still in college? And again, not a great joke, but we laughed, and then he wrapped it up. He was very amiable, very handsome in person. Very, you know, we all know, oh, he's kind of a good-looking guy. He looked very strong, and he was in like a sleeveless T-shirt. It was very weird to see him that way, but that was the man. So we worked there when we got hired again. The head writer said, well, welcome aboard. You're going to be fired in 13 weeks. And we were in this, again, sacrificial spot where whoever came in got fired in 13 weeks. And we hung in there for a year and a half. And then they finally fired us. And then 2 weeks later, they offered us our jobs back. And it was like, well, what did we learn in the past 2 weeks? But we had already moved on to something else. So that was
Bob Smith there when you were there?
Pardon me?
Was Bob Smith a writer there?
No, he would come around. He would come. I know Bob, and he would stop by. This is an interesting story, which was, you know, when the Writers Guild goes on strike, every once in a while they will have a picket line of just mm-hmm. every writer in town, 6,000 writers.
That's right. Everyone who ever fired you, you yeah. pass them like once every 15 minutes.
Yeah. And it was like, come on out and picket. This is the only, you know, sunlight you will get this year. And so I was on the Tonight Show during one of these strikes. And so here's the 8 Tonight Show writers picketing. And we meet some Tonight Show writers who had just been fired, and they joined the group, and they saw more Tonight Show writers from before them. And pretty soon there were literally like 60 or 80 Tonight Show writers, Johnny Carson writers, marching together. And I just looked at this mob and go, this is what it takes to kind of prop up a TV legend. You know, it takes an army to make this one guy, you know, sporadically funny.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah.
So then, how did you eventually get to The Simpsons?
You know the story by now. It was
again, they didn't want to do it, huh?
Max and Tom. There was funny where I think we were on a summer break from It's Gary Shandling Show. We were between seasons, and Alan Zweibel was starting up a new sitcom called The Boys. And this was a sitcom like set at the Friars Club, and it starred Norm Crosby and Norman Fell. It was a 2 Norman show. And I wanted to work on it. I said, this is a show I could really fit in on. And he wouldn't hire us. We didn't get hired on The Boys. And so Max and Tom were hired on The Boys. And at the same time, Sam Simon was starting The Simpsons, and he'd known them from Shandling Show. So he says, will you come work on The Simpsons? And they go, we're working on The Boys. They turned on The Simpsons to work on this Showtime sitcom. And they said, you know, we've got these friends, Mike and Al. And so that was it. We got hired on that first pre-season of The Simpsons. It was just a summer job making The Simpsons. And the whole summer I'm bitter because I have to work on this cartoon show instead of writing for Norm Crosby. And that was it. And we just had no expectations for the show. We just had fun. We didn't work that hard that summer. It was certainly much easier than the Shandling Show. And we spent the summer making the show. And at the end of the summer, I had to go back and do another season at It's Gary Shandling Show, where I'm working 90 hours a week on a show that had already been canceled. By that point, the show was canceled, and we were just making these shows to go nowhere. And at the same time I'm working, making these Shandling shows, The Simpsons debuts and becomes just the biggest hit of the land. And I'm there stuck on the Shandling show, making shows no one will see. So as soon as that finally wrapped, I went back to The Simpsons, and there I've been ever since.
Well, those early days were an awful lot of fun. And and we weren't getting paid very much. I remember writing scripts at the time. We were still getting Saturday morning cartoon rates.
Wow.
For writing those episodes. But yeah, it was a fairly small group, and we all were just having a great time. Talk a little bit about working with Sam, because Sam, to me, was the heart and soul of The Simpsons. And he gets credit, but I don't think he gets enough credit for what he brought to that show.
Yeah, Sam, I consider him the most able practitioner of sitcoms I ever saw, where it would just sort of pour out of him. You would work, but it was always kind of fun. And one thing he did that I'd never seen before, maybe you've seen it, is we'd just be sort of sitting in the room dictating the script. And, you know, the writer's assistant is taking it all down. This is before we did it on computer monitors. And we just get to it and he'd say, all right, that's an act break. And we dictate. We'd do it in like 3 days. And then they type up the script and it was in perfect shape. In other words, it was 3 15-minute acts. And I go, how did he know? He was never looking at the pages. It just, but so that was it. He always made it fun. We were always just kind of screwing around. And then it just became this show. It became this thing. Everything worked out on it. But yeah, that was a show. We would always just bail on work in the middle of the day and see whatever movie was coming out. And it is the only show where we would work together and then hang out together. All the writers would go out and see a movie and have dinner. It wasn't just you'd work and then get out of there.
When did Conan join?
Conan, I hired Conan. It was when Jay Cote and Wally Walidarsky were leaving. It's pretty interesting. They were the first, you know, we did the show for the first 3 or 4 years with the same core group of writers. And we did it with like 6 writers, which was not enough. I mean, now we do it with 20 writers. So it was 6 writers and we just worked nonstop. And so Jay and Wally were leaving and we needed to find someone to come in and fit in this tight team that had been working so closely together. And Al and I recommended a writer we knew named Paul Sims. And I think Sam met Paul Sims and turned him down. And so Paul went off. He created the show News Radio and made a fortune. So that was the greatest thing that ever happened to Paul Sims. And then we said, well, we know this crazy guy from college named Conan. And Conan
was on the Lampoon as well.
He was on the Harvard Lampoon. It was interesting. He was not our contemporary. He's 5 years younger than us, but I think we were living in New York and someone just called us from the Lampoon. They said, we just elected this guy to the staff that's like nothing we've ever seen. And so I got on a train. We went up to Boston just to meet Conan O'Brien, this 18-year-old kid. And he was just that guy. The guy you see on TV 40 years later was that Conan. He was fully formed. He was just kind of maniacally funny. And so we helped him get a job. This is pretty funny. We helped him get a job at Not Necessarily the News. That was our first TV job. That was a sketch show on HBO. And they had hired us there and they liked us there. And the showrunner, Pat Lee, said, are there any more of you at Harvard? We said, yeah, you know, they're cranking them out pretty frequently. This is, I think, what started the Lampoon deluge in Hollywood. Was every year she would just hire a new team out of the Harvard Lampoon. So Rob Lazebnik, who writes for The Simpsons for 25 years, his first job was at Not Necessarily the News. And then the next year she hired the team of Greg Daniels and Conan O'Brien. And she's
they
got
were a team?
they were a writing team. They're earning scale and not necessarily the news. And they got fired. There's a lot of those stories. And they got fired. They have these two geniuses working together. We're not worth splitting scale at that show.
Yeah, Greg Daniels went on to do The Office and Parks and Rec. Yeah, he did okay for himself.
He's doing okay. Yeah, they were funny. They're very affable guys.
And that is part one of my two-part interview with Mike Reese. Now, next week, we get into more of his vacationing in Honduras, as well as interesting stories like he was asked to audition for the Steve Carell part in The Office. Well, needless to say, he didn't get it. Anyway, that's part two next week with Mike Reese. As always, our thanks to Adam and Susie Meister-Butler, Howard Hoffman, John Wolfert, Bruce and Jason Miller. And I'm available if you want to email me, HollywoodLevine@Outlook.com. That's HollywoodLevine@Outlook.com. Also on Twitter, @KenLevine. Also on Instagram, Hollywood and Levine. Stay safe. We will see you next week. Thanks for listening. Hollywood.